And now, coming at you from the 5-Star Physique Studio in Knoxville, Tennessee, this is The Drop Set with your host, Darren Starr.
Thank you, Jonathan. Much appreciated there. So, hello, everybody. Good to have you here with me today. I appreciate it. Thank you for listening. If you are listening via iTunes, Google Play, etc., thanks. And if you're listening on the website, well, thank you as well. So, a couple things right off the top. Wherever you get this podcast from, go and leave a review, a rating and a review. I would love it. Thanks. And also, let's talk about the poll. So, I want to cover last week's poll and then go over the new one for this week. So, clearly, I need to do a better job of marshaling the troops, because I mean, we got some better a little bit better response on the poll this week, but I want more. I'm greedy. I want more votes. More votes. It will always be posted on the website. So go to 5starphysique.com. There's a big graphic banner there. Just scroll right below that. The poll question's right there. So literally, it will take like 10 seconds of your time, and then, you know, that's it. So I will try and do a better job of reminding everybody throughout the week to go vote without being a giant pain in the ass. That's a difficult line for me to tread. So if I cross it, apologies in advance, but I'll try and be a little bit more persistent about getting people to do that. So the old question was, what was the old question? My goodness, I was so focused on the new one that I just put up. We've been talking for the past couple weeks about judging at shows. And what I asked this last week was, should judging scorecards be broken down by the categories that competitors are actually scored on? As opposed to the way it's done now, whereas, you know, you've got your scorecard, you're a judge, you're sitting at the table, you're like, well, that guy or gal is best, so they get a one. I guess they're next, so they get a two. They're probably third, so they get a three. And that's how it's scored. And then all of those are totaled up amongst all the judges. You add them up, and then the lowest score gets first. The second lowest score gets second, and so on and so forth. So there's no justification needed for any of those scores other than this is what I think. And, you know, you don't know what's in the judge's head as far as why this person is deserving of first, why this person is deserving of last. And I mean, you know, the guidelines are out there. You know, we know what these people are being scored on, but there's no transparency. So that's not ever put anywhere. Like, well, this person, you know, is best on size and conditioning, but boy, their symmetry is a mess. Their presentation is terrible. So even though they're the biggest and the hardest, I can't give them first. They got to be second. And, you know, you could see a breakdown like that. So the downside potentially to that is it could complicate the judging and the scoring process a bit. So, you know, you're going to probably, in order to do it in a reasonable amount of time, because I'm also proposing, you know, this is one of the big things, like the judging needs to be fixed. But I think it would be great if also the NPC switched to a running format where you do pre-judging, you tabulate the scores, and you immediately go into finals for each division. So it's like bikini is scheduled at 10 o'clock. So let's come out, let's do pre-judging, and you've done pre-judging, and then 10:30, okay, we're going to take a 5-minute break. We're going to tabulate the scores. Then we're going to do individual walks and present awards. Bikini, you're done at 11. That's it. Your show's over. Go eat and start worrying about the next show. That's it. Rather than making it an all-day affair, I think that would be so much better for everybody involved. I know it would encourage me as a fan to go and pay a ticket, to go to a show and support somebody. If I was on the fence, like, man, it's going to be an all-day thing, or, you know, well, finals start at 6, but I'm going to be on stage somewhere around 8 or 9, maybe, and so you show up at 9. Oh, actually, I was on at 7:30. They changed the order. I mean, you know, how many times has that happened? Or, you know, do you go to pre-judging or finals? Well, okay, so pre-judging is where, you know, you actually kind of need the audience participation. That's when, you know, you're actually being scored. Finals are just a presentation. So, you know, it's difficult as an audience member, and let's be clear, I mean, you know, that's a big part of what a show is about, is the crowd and catering to the crowd. So I think the pre-judging and finals format is just a horrible disservice to the people that pay for the tickets to go see a show. And let's be clear, it's a giant pain in the ass as a competitor too, to have to hold your conditioning all day, as opposed to just like, okay, my class is going on at 2 o'clock, that's what I need to peak for, and then I'll be done by 3:30, whatever. I mean, that's a much better way to do it. There are amateur natural organizations that run shows that way. Not nearly enough, in my estimation, but it is done. So anyway, that's a side note. The question is, do we want to see scorecards broken down by these categories? And the verdict was unanimous. 100% said yes. So, and again, if I had more respondents on this poll, we probably would have got a little bit of dissension there, but we got enough. You know, I mean, it was unanimous, not a single vote saying no. So, I think that's encouraging, at least, that I'm not barking up the wrong tree completely. So, any feedback on that is always welcome. I think I will spare you the litany of ways to get in touch with me, but if you just search, go to Google and type in five-star physique, and then you'll find me somehow, and you can contact me that way. So, the poll question for this week, a little bit different. So we're diving out of the competitive realm here a little bit. I just want to get a sense for what people are doing. So where did this go? I had it on my screen and then it disappeared. So it's not live yet. Here we go. The question is, very simply, this is not something that requires an opinion. I just want to know what you're doing. How often do you take a rest day? The options that I've given you, every 3 to 4 days, every 5 to 6 days, once a week, like clockwork, at least once every 2 weeks, or rest day, WTF. Like, you know, if you just don't take a rest day, that's your option. So go to 5starphysique.com, scroll down below the main header graphic, vote in that poll. Let me know. I'm just trying to get a sense for what people are doing out there, generally speaking. I know what I favor, but I also know that what I favor, I have a hard time sticking with. I think what I need to do realistically is once every 5 to 6 days, take a rest day. If I was answering that poll honestly, it would be the last option. Rest day, WTF. I mean, you know, I could easily go 3 weeks without taking a rest day, and I will add, to my detriment. Like, I have a hard time just not going in, but I'm at a stage right now where I mentioned this to somebody yesterday. I'm at the point right now in this phase, in this off season, where I'm going to the gym because I know I have to, not because I want to, which is a sad place to be. So I'm going to force myself to take a couple days off. Today was supposed to be day one, but I went in. I'm like, well, I need to do some calves and some cardio. That was a mistake. I should have stayed home. So tomorrow I'll be staying home. That's my promise to you. I'll be staying home. Maybe. Main topics that we're going to talk about today, we've got two of them. I want to talk about variable tracking when it comes to workouts. So your workout logs, what's important to track. I know I've talked about this before. I want to dig a little bit deeper into this, what's important and why. And then also another topic that I've talked about before, but it's a conversation that I keep having with clients. I keep seeing reference to this online and social media all the time. I want to talk about the scale once again. So we will cover that as well and dig in deep on that as well. This last week, so in the world of bodybuilding, we had the Arnold, Arnold Amateur and the Arnold Classic all together. So what happened, you know, I titled this and I just said, you know, in my little outline for the episode today, I said Arnold Recap. And, you know, I mean, they're pro shows, and you know, unless you're competing at the highest level, I just don't see there's a lot of relevancy to what happens at the highest level of these pro shows. So it can be fun to watch. I mean, this sounds weird, I know, but as a coach, as somebody whose bodybuilding is my career, I don't really get into this all that much. And I know I had a lot of clients who went and visited, and they were hanging out at the expo, they were watching the show. That's cool. It's just, yeah, it's not my thing. It's like, you know, I like to focus on the nuts and bolts and how stuff gets done and the process, but the actual show and what happens on stage, etc., it's less compelling to me, I guess you could say. But you know, just scrolling through the picks, I'm like, you know, there's such a fine line that separates so many of these people. Just a couple of random comments. I know that a couple of weeks ago there was or a handful of weeks ago, I saw there was a conversation on a Facebook group about bodybuilding. They were talking about Raleigh Winkler and how he was like, you know, there were pictures of him out on a boat and people are like, what's he doing? Why is he partying? I'm sure he's drinking out there. You don't go onto a boat and just take water with you. What's he doing? He's got the Arnold Classic in a couple weeks. He's so lazy, but well, he took fourth. You know what? He was a freak. Was he perfect? No, his conditioning could have been a little bit better. The dude was not partying it up. So I just want all of the armchair coaches out there who want to give advice to these pros, just shut the hell up. You don't know what they're doing. Okay. I mean, a guy can be on a boat a couple weeks before a show and it doesn't mean shit, all right? So just, you know, slow your damn roll a little bit and chill out. And, you know, it's really easy to criticize and sit back and pick apart everything that anybody else is doing, but just worry about your own damn self, please. I tell you what, the men's physique, looking at the lineup here, all these dudes are huge. And if any one of these guys would have won, I don't think there would have been much complaining. I struggle with this being the aesthetic for men's physique. I understand. I mean, men's physique is one of those categories where you look at, you know, a local show and then you look at the pros and there's a wide disparity just because men's physique is seen as kind of the entry level division for guys. And so you see a lot of dudes there who, you know, are underdeveloped, underconditioned. But at the pro level, I mean, there's a huge disparity there. So, it's difficult to reconcile that. And then, let's see, the other thing was the women, specifically figure and physique. You know, I've talked about this before, a couple weeks ago about Shanique Grant, and, you know, I said, you know, she's got one of those physiques, it's cool to look at, but I think it's kind of sad that it's winning shows, just because, and I would kind of say the same for the top two on figure, Candace Lewis-Carter and Sydney Gillen. So, you know, cool physiques, but what are we looking for here? I mean, basically, I think the judging standards for both of these divisions need to be rewritten in such a way that it is clear what we are looking for is the smallest waist possible and the most cartoonishly large shoulders possible. And everything else is, you know, whatever. It is what it is. So I think it's sad. And really what I think is sad is the disparity from what gets rewarded on stage versus what is written. Like if you look at the IFBB guidelines for figure, I'm not talking about amateur NPC stuff, which I've picked apart at length in the past, you know, the guidelines for the IFBB, I think they're pretty much cut and paste. You know, for women's physique specifically, you know, what it says that they're looking for, you know, when that division was first announced, there was a paragraph written up about what that division is going to be. That introductory paragraph, as far as what women's physique is still the official judging guideline for that division. They haven't fleshed it out any beyond that in writing. And for figure, the clarification that it offers there, what they're looking for is a quote-unquote small degree of muscularity. Now, look at this picture and tell me if you see that in any of these winners. So what I'm saying, I don't necessarily think that the results need to be different. What I'm saying is that the judging standards need to be revised to reflect reality, because history has shown that judges are going to reward what they're going to reward, and there can be directives from up above to change those standards. They're not going to be applied. The judges are going to ignore those. Still, the pressure is on when you're behind that judging table. You've got to go with what's there. And, you know, you can score somebody down for excessive muscularity, but if everybody's too big, what does that mean? So change the damn judging guidelines. Just update them, please. Do us all a favor. Now, in the non-bodybuilding world, last week for me, a few things went down. So it was my birthday on Friday, kind of took a day. I put in about 2 hours of work in the morning, but I mostly took the day off. I went and caught a movie, which was... I went and saw Annihilation, which, if you're not familiar with it, it's kind of... you know, sci-fi, I guess you could call it. It's with Natalie Portman. It's new. It came out like last week of February, I think. That was, boy, that was the weirdest, most disturbing thing I've probably ever seen. It wasn't necessarily scary. It was just unsettling from start to finish. Like, as the movie went on, I kind of had this pit in my stomach, and I'm like, wow, is that the popcorn kind of eating at me here? No, it's the tension of the movie. It just kind of wears on you. You're like, oh my God, what's going to happen here? And, you know, again, it's not like a shock and scare kind of movie or anything like that. It's just this sense of dread that is permeating throughout the whole thing. And it's very cerebral. It's definitely a movie that is comfortable asking questions but doesn't really want to answer them, because I don't think the answers would necessarily be satisfying. And also, I'm just thinking about, you know, this movie, without giving anything away, it revolves around this phenomenon that appears out towards the coast and starts expanding, and you know, expeditions are sent into it, and those people that go into it are never heard from again. So we follow another expedition as they go into it, just of five women that go into it. And I think in a case like that, if something like this were to happen in the real world, I think it's very possible that a situation like that could find closure without us, like the people involved, humanity, really having any idea what happened, like not being able to explain it. So I think, you know, I applaud the movie for not trying to answer something that, you know, probably doesn't have an answer that makes sense. So I think it's very cool. And I tell you what, like the last 30 minutes or so, the final act of the movie is just I've said it before, disturbing and unsettling in a way that I hadn't experienced before in a movie theater. Like, it was freaking my shit out. Like, I wanted to just kind of look away, not because there was anything gross or scary happening, but just this palpable sense of tension and dread. It was so well done. And it was the visuals, it was the sound, especially like the soundtrack that went with it, which was just super weird. I mean, the whole thing felt like one giant acid trip, basically, or at least what I imagine an acid trip might feel like. It was creepy. Anyway, also, this last weekend, my wife had her annual art show. So she is an art teacher, and at her school, it's a private school here in town, and they put on a professional art show every year. And so people from the region and even outside of the region will come and set up a booth. And they convert the gymnasium into, you know, basically an exhibition center. So you walk through, everybody's got like their jewelry, their paintings, their, you know, clay sculptures, their whatever. And so she has a booth in there. Typically, you know, you'll have to pay for a booth in there, and it's not super cheap. As a member of the faculty at the school, she gets a booth for free, which is great. So it's her one chance per year to be kind of a professional artist. She had a great year this year, actually had a lot of sales. So we're going to keep that going by keeping her working year round. So plug for her also. You can check out her website. It is at DeniaKirk.com. That's DENIA Kirk.com. And you can, full disclosure, I am her webmaster, and I suck at being a webmaster, so it's a little bare bones right now, but you can read a little bit about her and see some of her current work that's up there. So we're going to be fleshing that out in the coming weeks too. So this past week for me, no days off, sadly, but you know, tomorrow and maybe the following day I'm going to take off. I really need to kind of let my body catch up a little bit and just rest, recover, maybe get a little bit of cardio in, stay on it with the meal plan. But I gotta have a little bit of downtime from the gym for sure. So that is the goal. We're bringing back a couple of regular segments this week, so let's get right down to it.
It's time for the airing of grievances. Pet peeve of the week.
Okay, stop me if you've heard this one before. You're in the gym, you're gonna do a bench or a squat, something like that, and you're like, I think I got this weight, but boy, it sure would be nice if I had somebody to help me out. So you look around and you're like, who is the best potential spotter in here? Oh no. How many times have you said, I bet that guy can spot me, and then, or gal, and been really, really disappointed and be like, wow, you are just a terrible spotter. You have no idea how to do it. My pet peeve of the week is, in fact, the terrible spotter, which is one of the most universally consistent things in all gyms. People who don't know how to spot. So, you know, I'm always hesitant to spot somebody on a squat just because watch a powerlifting meet and you can see how a barbell squat is supposed to be spotted. It takes two people. You can't do it effectively with one. So, and boy, if you're going to do it with one person, that person's behind you, and that's just closer than I want anybody in my space or that I want to be in anybody else's space. It's like, you know what? I'm going to set the bailout bars in this squat rack, and it's going to be my spotter. And if I fail, big deal. At least I don't have to feel your junk up against my butt when I'm going down to squat. I don't have to have you grabbing my nipples because your hands are around my arms or anything like that. I don't need that. I would rather fail on a squat than get an extra rep and have to deal with that. And, you know, that. I mean, that's the thing. If you're squatting to the point where you need a spot and you're not in a cage with bailout bars, you are doing it wrong. If you're just squatting out in air and you're trying to max out, like, that is just dumb, because you're squatting. You know, if you can't get that weight up and if your spotter's a little bit slow, you know, there's a good chance they aren't going to be able to rescue you because they're not in a very good mechanical position from back behind you in order to really help. So the value in spotting a squat, I think, is a little questionable at times. And now if we talk about bench press, which is the other thing that's commonly spotted, here is the number one rule of bench press when you're spotting. Do not touch the damn bar until I am failing the rep. I mean, just keep your damn hands off of it. Do not curl or upright row my bench press. Keep your hands off of it. Spotters out there, keep your hands off of the bar. So the idea is the person starts the rep, they do the negative, and then they push back up. Now at that point, the bar is going up. Your hands do not go anywhere near the bar until it starts going back down on its own. At that point, you're in a good position. You're over top of the bar. You've got a good pull there. You can just kind of deadlift it, basically. And the other person, they're still able to push. So it's not like you have to be able to pull up everything. You know, you've got to be able to throw in like, you know, 15, 20, 25%, you know, whatever they need to help fix the rep and get it back up. So you've got to give them a chance, though, to fail. There's one guy that I consistently spot in there, and, you know, I help him unrack it. Just because, you know, on some bench setups, you can expend a lot of energy and a lot of effort just getting the bar into position for the first rep. Now, I will help him unrack it, and then I step back. Like, I'm 3 feet out of his field of view. I can see what's going on. And, you know, if somebody fails on a bench press, it's typically something that doesn't necessarily happen in the blink of an eye. You know, you've got time to react. You know, that bar is going to go up, and then you can see, oh, that bar isn't going up anymore. You take a step forward, it starts to go back down, and then you're in position. You put your hands on the bar, and you pull. Stay out of the way. This one guy that I spot all the time, you know, he's doing, you know, a lot of doubles, a lot of triples. His reps, you know, that they're very borderline as far as whether they're going to make it or not. But if he's going to get a rep and he's going to count it, he's going to do it on his own 100%. That's all there is to it. There's no like, well, I helped you a little bit on that. Or, yeah, I mean, that I didn't have my hands on that bar hardly at all. I mean, if your hands are on the bar, you're helping. So stop it. His reps, you know, especially if he's doing a triple, like his second and third reps, they're ugly and they're slow. And I can tell, like, based on, okay, that second rep got up, I can tell, like, okay, that third one has no prayer, so I'm going to be ready. But I'm still out of the way just because I don't want to be in his field of view messing him up and distracting him while he still has a chance of completing the rep. Anyway, gym pet peeve of the week, bad spotters. So if you have a conversation with people, I mean, you know, if you're the type that wants to talk to people in the gym about what it takes to be a good spotter, and be one yourself, let people do the work. And now if they're not shooting for super low reps, like they're not just trying to get a single or a double or a triple, but they're trying to get like 10, 12, 15. Okay. Some of those reps are going to get a little dicey. And at that point, yeah, jump in, help a little bit. You know, I mean, a bodybuilding style bench press or shoulder press or whatever, helping somebody just a little bit, especially on the concentric for some of those later reps, that can be helpful. Talk with your spotter and understand what it is that you expect them to do. Like, don't be afraid to say, you know, keep your hands off the bar until it looks like I'm about to die. You know, don't touch it otherwise. You know, I need to get these reps on my own. I'm only doing two or three, whatever. Just have that conversation with whoever and do it. So help people be a better spotter. And as for you yourself, be the best spotter you can be.
Get ready to rock. It's Music of the Week.
Okay, so for Music of the Week this week, I had to do a little bit of research on this. So, and once again, I appreciate everybody who humors me through this segment. I know it's not related to bodybuilding, but hey, music is important to me. I know it is for a lot of you people as well. And if I can, you know, turn people onto some new stuff that they haven't heard before, then all the better. So, for the album that I wanted to discuss this week, I had to go back and listen to Creed. And so, you know, they only put out like four albums. So I kind of cherry picked and went through a little bit and listened to some stuff. And, you know, because I had an impression that like, this is a lousy band. This band sucks. And I know that's a commonly held belief. It's like, you know, if you want to just reach consensus on musical opinion with people, just talk about Creed and Nickelback. And pretty much everybody says that they suck. So I'm like, you know, did they really suck? So I went back and yes, I can confirm that they do in fact suck. They're a crappy band. They really are. And, you know, more than a crappy band, they put out some crappy music. So I think probably, you know, in going through stuff, I think if I had to pick a favorite song by Creed, it would be One. And yet, I think that's probably the fourth best song that I can think of with that same title, with the versions by Metallica, U2, and Three Dog Night being far superior in every sense of the word. So anyway, I had to go back and confirm that just because I find it so hard to believe that Alter Bridge, which is a different band, kind of, is so unbelievably good because it is the exact same lineup but with a different singer. So you take Creed, you remove Scott Stapp, which is absolutely addition by subtraction, and you plug in Miles Kennedy instead, and you get Alter Bridge. And the bands really could not sound any more different. I mean, the Alter Bridge's first album came out in 2004, and Creed's last album came out in 2001, I believe. So there's not a tremendous time gap here or anything like that. But nonetheless, if you go and listen to some Creed stuff and then you listen to Alter Bridge, and the album that I would recommend is Fortress, which was from 2013, I believe. It's their fourth album. And just listen to that and see if you hear anything that resembles Creed in that album. And I would say, you know, maybe a little bit of rhythm guitar from Mark Tremonti, perhaps. But other than that, you know, no, not even. I mean, like, you know, I don't know if you ever hear a guitar solo in a Creed song, but Tremonti is an absolute beast on guitar. Lead, and I mean, his rhythm stuff is really creative. He is a riff monster. He writes some absolutely spectacular riffs. I mean, it's phenomenal to realize that this is the same band. It's ridiculous. And you throw Miles Kennedy into the mix, who can actually sing and not just growl and sound tough like Scott Stapp does. He's just terrible. But I mean, Kennedy has such a crazy, crazy voice, and he's perfectly suited for this group. So, I mean, the tracks that I would really recommend as standouts here, Cry of Achilles, which is fantastic. That's made it into a playlist that I've got on Spotify that I have publicly available under Five Star Physique. If you go search for Five Star Physique on Spotify, you'll see I have a few playlists up there. That's one of the songs that I've got on them. Lover, which is it's a ballad, but as far as ballads go, it is just absolutely just top notch. The other one, I mean, All Ends Well is great. It's another ballady type song. Calm the Fire is probably the standout on the whole album for me, though. And if you want to listen to a guy who can really sing, just listen to the first minute of that song. And just the riffing is exceptional. The solos are exceptional. There's a lot of bass heavy breakdowns, which is awesome. And, you know, the vocals are really layered. And Tremonti actually sings lead on at least one of these songs as well, and sounds pretty good doing it. So anyway, Alter Bridge. One step removed from Creed, but yet completely different bands. It's just shocking how different it is. So if you're going to listen to anything new this week, that would be my recommendation. Okay, so I wanted to have a very sexy conversation about training variables. So I know that sounds really, really thrilling right out of the gate, but here are the things to consider. So bodybuilding is basically a long-term game about progressive overload. So if you start on day one of your bodybuilding journey, like I've decided I'm going to join a gym, okay, great. Here is my workout. This is what I'm going to do. And okay, you log everything and you take great copious notes on your workout. And then, you know, maybe you do a different workout the next day and a different workout the next day. So you've got like a 3 or 4 day rotation built up. Great. Fast forward 10 years down the road. Are you still going to be doing that same workout? Are you still going to be training at that same level of intensity? No, clearly not. You've got to have progressive overload, meaning you need to force your body to do more over time. Now, at some stages, it's going to be really easy to force your body to do more. You know, going from week one of your bodybuilding journey to week two, I think you can expect some pretty significant increases. I mean, you know, you're going to have some pretty epic soreness to deal with. So maybe week one to week three might be a little bit more of a realistic comparison. But still, I mean, you're going to progress. And I always tell people, like, especially people that are relatively new to this, that if you were able in your little realm where you are right now, if you were able to gaze into a crystal ball and look a year or so into the future and see a successful version of yourself in the bodybuilding realm and what you are doing a year in the future, you should be seeing that future version of yourself performing workouts that would likely kill you today. If you're doing stuff where you seem like, oh, okay, that's pretty reasonable. I think I could probably do that today. Chances are you're not pushing hard enough, or at least over the course of that imaginary year, you have not pushed hard enough. Conversely, if you look back, and this might be a little bit more realistic, if you look back on workouts that you were doing a year ago, you should kind of laugh at those and be like, oh yeah, I remember when I thought that was hard. So that in a nutshell is kind of a way to wrap your head around the overall concept of progressive overload. So the issue becomes people think of progressive overload and they think of two things, volume and weight. So the way to work harder, I just do more and I lift heavier and that's it. And if you do that, then logic dictates, not to get all Spock on you over here or anything like that, but logic would dictate then that, you know, 5 years in the future, you're going to be lifting for 5 hours a day and you're going to be lifting all the weight in the gym, right? I mean, there are practical limits to this stuff. You know, you can't continually increase volume all the time. You can't continually increase weight all the time. Unless you're a power lifter, and even then, you know, those increases, you know, if you're an experienced power lifter and you can put 10 or 15 pounds on your squat in a year, that's pretty good. You know, in bodybuilding circles, you know, we're not trying to push max weight. What we're trying to do is create max fatigue and then increase the weight that we can use while getting that max fatigue. So we want to exhaust the muscles, and we want to do it efficiently and then move on from there. So the variables, if we can kind of, you know, go through some of these here. I mean, the two that I just mentioned are the clearest examples. So you've got the weight that you move, and there is also, I should clarify here, there is a philosophy that I like to approach when it comes to workouts, and that is one of changing things up on a pretty regular basis. And any one of my clients who has worked with me, or if you've checked out any of the workout programs that I have up available on my website, they'll say that they have a shelf life of about 4 weeks or so. So it's just a one-shot rotation. So, you know, there's 4, 5, 6 workouts in a split. And you go through that for about a month. So typically about 4 rotations, maybe 5 for a shorter split. And then at that point, it's my experience and my philosophy that shows that that split has kind of expired and it's lost its shelf life and we need to retire it and move on to something else. Now, I know that there are a lot of people out there who can run a split for longer than that and still have it be productive. And there are probably even more people out there that think, wow, 4 weeks is a long time on the same set of workouts. So I would challenge both of those populations to stick to something more like a 4 to 5 week protocol for how long your splits last. Just because here's the thing, if it's shorter than that, and I have argued at length on this subject with clients before, if you go in and just, you know, you're intuitively doing stuff and okay, coming from experience here, this is how I lift, largely because, you know, I'm always trying to do new stuff and come up with ideas for workouts, etc. So for the most part, you know, there are times when I will adopt my own philosophy and follow it, and I always notice, like, man, this is so much more productive. But then, you know, duty calls and I've got to continue doing, you know, research, trying new things. And so I get pulled out. So it's very difficult to be a successful coach and a successful bodybuilder at the same time. It's tricky. I've had a lot of arguments with clients who are like, I want to do something different every week. I'm like, well, you're making it really hard to force progressive overload when you do that. Now, if you do that and you look like Dallas McCarver or you look like Phil Heath or anyone like that, I'm going to be like, hey, you know what? You might be onto something here. Short of that, though, if you're like not tapped out towards your genetic potential, I'm not going to buy that shit. It's like, you need to try something different. We need to shake things up a little bit. So, you know, if you're sitting here and you're 160, 170 pounds and you're, you know, 5'10", 5'11", 6 foot, and you're thinking like, I've got it made. I know what I'm doing here. You don't. And you should try some new stuff. Pull yourself out of your comfort zone. There's no harm in trying. And you might just learn something. You might just force your body to grow and change a little bit. So the variable of weight, this is the one that everybody focuses on. This, and the reason why is because if you are logging your workouts, this is the easiest thing to write down. You can remember this a lot of the time. You can track it. There's no mystery involved. It's very quantifiable, and a lot of these variables that I'm going to be talking about are qualitative. It's very quantitative as opposed to qualitative. So you write down a number and you're like, that's the weight that I did. Great. And if you try and simplify things to that level, it's just really easy to wrap your head around. And one of the big things that I want to get across in this conversation is that oftentimes, if you're going to really properly assess your ability and your success in forcing progressive overload, you've got to embrace some more nebulous ideas. not just like, this is the weight that I lift, brah, this is me. You know, there's more to it than that. So what? Well, okay, there's how many reps as well. So I always encourage people, you know, when I'll write a workout and it's like, this is your rep target or your target range. And so if, let's say the range is, you know, 10 to 12 is what we're looking for on this set. Okay, great. So when you're writing your logs, make a note, like, is it 10 or is it 12? You know, how many reps did you get? And if you're constantly hitting 12, 12, 12, 12, 12, understand that, you know, you can probably bump that weight up. And if your form doesn't sacrifice and things still seem reasonable and they still feel good, and you're still hitting 10 reps, at least as a minimum, you're good to go. So the other thing on that is that one thing that I've noticed in my years and years and years of doing this and in watching people in the gym is if they are given a rep target and they plug in a specific weight, like I need to get 10 reps here, so I'm going to do 80 pounds on this exercise. Your body will find a way to make it feel like it's hit failure at about 10 reps, even if, you know, I always use the lift like there's a gun to your head mentality. And if there was, literally, would you be stopping at 10? I bet under most circumstances with decent form, gun to your head, you could probably get 15, 16, 17, 18 reps. I think it's amazing what you would be capable of if you really forced yourself to do it. And part of learning how to be a successful bodybuilder is forcing yourself to push that envelope and get your body out of that comfort zone and get more sets in with that gun to your head mentality. These are what I call those beast mode sets, where something clicks and you just realize, and I've had clients who have reported, like, I've always been stuck at like 250 pounds on the leg press, and today somebody put 300 on there and I did it, and it was fine and it was hard, but I did it. And so then they put 350 on there, and before they knew it, they're doing 450 pounds. They're doing more than like double what they started with, just because they realized, oh yeah, I'm capable of this. And it's the same thing. So don't let your rep target dictate your perceived failure point. And I realize that's kind of a weird concept to wrap your head around, but if I say, here's the weight, like I'm training somebody in person, I put the pin in the weight stack right here and I say, here's the weight, give me 10. You're going to find a way to make it feel and look like you're hitting failure at about that 10th rep. But more often than not, you're going to find that there's more in the tank. Don't listen to your body. Your body is programmed to lie to you and have you reserve contractile ability in the muscles. This is that whole, you know, evolutionary fight or flight thing once again. So without getting into a big, you know, a big controversial discussion about whether or not evolution is real, we'll just say, as I've said before, whether or not you believe in evolution, it believes in you. So back when prehistoric man roamed the earth and he's out there, you know, he's working hard. He's, you know, who knows what the hell he's doing. He's banging rocks together. You know, he's trying to form a wheel out of something so he can roll some stuff back home. He's lifting stuff. He's all over the place. He's working hard. But you know what? Boy, there's that, you know, saber-toothed tiger lurking right around the corner. You got to have some energy stored in that body so that you can still run away from said tiger. Although realistically, you know, our protagonist here is probably screwed if there's a tiger lurking right around the corner, because he ain't going to outrun that tiger. Roll with me here. Hypothetical situation. You got to save some of that muscular performance for those life or death situations. So your body has this natural tendency to want to hold back a little bit. And bodybuilding is all about pushing the envelope on that threshold, and saying, you know what, we're in a pretty good society here. You know, I don't have to fear random wild beasts around the corner that are going to try and rip my throat out. So you know what, I can totally exhaust myself. I can completely take my muscles to failure, and it's okay. You know, the worst thing that I have to do is drive through some rush hour traffic on the way home. So you can push it a little bit more, but your body is really hardwired and programmed. That's what that lactic acid response is. That muscle's burning. It's saying, stop, stop, stop. You know, you need to preserve some of this. And you've just got to say, no, I don't. I do not. I know it hurts. It burns. Body, I know you want me to stop. I ain't gonna. I'm gonna go because I need this shit to grow. That's all there is to it. So force it on the reps. The number of sets and the overall volume of a workout is another variable, and that's one of the reasons why I want to adjust programming on a regular basis, like every 4 to 5 weeks, because one of the things that I'll often tell people is, okay, as we progress into set or into week 2 or 3 on this split, let's go ahead and add an extra set here or there. So we are progressing that volume, but then when we plug in the new split, everything's different. All of these variables get reset and we're starting over from square one again. So another thing is your rest. So if you take, you know, rest periods that are of length X throughout the course of a workout, if you take then next week, if you take rest periods that are X minus 5 seconds, a little bit shorter, but all the other variables are the same, you're doing the same amount of work in less time. So, and well, I mean, that's actually the definition of work is, you know, force over time, over distance. Anyway, whatever. We'll skip the physics. but if you do the same amount of work in less time, you are progressing. You are still in that progressive overload territory. RPE, rating of perceived exertion, how hard are you working? That is something where you should get into the habit of honestly asking yourself that question after a set and being able to assess it. You don't always need to log it, but be honest with yourself. If your RPEs are constantly in a 6 to 7 range, over the long term, you're not going to grow. It's got to be higher than that. So be honest with yourself. And if you can, another thing there is if you are doing a certain weight, you've got a certain exercise at a certain weight, at a certain rep range, your form is consistent from one week to the next. And if week one, it feels like your RPE is about an 8 and the next week it feels like it's about a 7, hey, that's progression. I understand that's a qualitative thing and it's very easy to kind of lie to yourself a little bit and say, well, I don't think it was as hard this week, or, oh man, it was way easier last week, whatever. Just be honest with yourself as always and understand, you know, that's really just a sign like, okay, that was hard, but maybe it's not as hard as it should be. So maybe I could try bumping up weight, you know, squeezing out a couple extra reps towards the end of that set, whatever. Play around with some additional variables. Quality. If you're able to do 10 reps and like the last couple reps are really iffy, and then you reach that point where it really feels like failure, and then the next week you come around, you do all 10 reps and they all look pretty good, like they're pretty sharp looking reps, that is also progression. You're compensating less, you're using less momentum, you're swinging the weight around less, you're making the muscle work harder, you're more focused, you have higher quality reps. And another variable is just overall fatigue. You know, I had somebody ask about this earlier in the week, like, you know, if I'm doing chest and triceps together and triceps are always getting second, you know, am I really just not working them as much? You know, are they missing out? And, you know, of course, that's a complicated thing to answer. It depends on what the chest workout looks like. If you're doing a lot of flies, I mean, your triceps aren't doing anything during that. So they're fresh. The rest of you might be a little bit tired. You might be a little bit winded. And then there could be potentially a lack of focus when you get to triceps. Like you're just kind of done. You're ready for the workout to be over. And you're like, oh, I still got to hit the second muscle group. That's the biggest concern. Or if you're doing a lot of pressing, then the triceps are involved in that. But hey, guess what? It's not a direct tricep exercise, but all of that contributes to the overall fatigue. So what that means is when you get to triceps, you're going to be moving less weight with them, but they're still having fatigue generated. So all you're doing there is losing out on the ability to ego lift a little bit and focus on how big those numbers are. And really it's like, you know, let's say in March this month, you've got a split set up and you've got a specific arm day and it starts with triceps. So you hit them when they're fresh. You crush some great numbers and then you do some biceps after that, you're done. Then in April, you have a new split and it's chest and triceps. So you go in and every day you're hitting triceps, they're already fatigued when you get to them because that chest workout, it's really heavy with presses. You've got like incline, flat press, dumbbell, machine press, maybe a cable fly thrown in there, whatever, who knows. So your triceps are pre-exhausted already, and then you go into the tricep workouts and the tricep exercises and some of those movements, you're like, man, I can't lift anywhere near what I did the last workout. So clearly I am not progressing, I am regressing. Wrong. The context matters tremendously. So I always encourage people to track their PRs. So if you're hitting a PR in the context of a workout, don't just focus on your PRs for like squat, deadlift, bench, whatever. But, you know, like, oh, I had a PR on this machine chest press or whatever. That counts. You know, what I want is to try and, you know, keep your reps looking solid. I want that mind-muscle connection there. I want that contractile force there. But with all of those things being held constant and hitting your rep target, I want more weight. In a vacuum, we're talking about like over the course of a 4 to 5 week split. That's the big thing. So keep in mind now, so you progress through a split, you're week one, week two, week three, week four, week five, and then you go into a new one, all of your PRs get reset at that point. You know, I mean, and again, we're not talking about one rep maxes or anything like that. We're talking about, hey, I did 115 pounds for 10 reps on this. Great. Let's aim for 120 next time out and see if we can still maintain form and still feel it without transitioning into that brute force mentality. So with those PRs get reset. So then you come around, you're doing a tricep press down, you're on that cable stack with your arm workout, and you're like, man, I got up to 160 pounds on that thing. It was the opening movement. Everything felt strong. And, you know, I was shooting for 8 to 10 reps. Okay, well, the next split now, you do chest first, and then you do triceps. You're doing that same press down, but it's the last exercise, and it's programmed for 25 reps. I mean, clearly, so many variables have changed here. The weight that you've lifted on that exercise before is completely and totally irrelevant to what you're going to be doing this time. So you might be like, man, I did 160 pounds before and now I can only do 80. Well, everything has changed. You know, I mean, you're starting this muscle group now and it's pre-exhausted. You're doing three exercises before this one and you're doing three times the reps here. So you've got to take all that stuff into account. And that is why I always, you know, I basically require this of everybody that I work with. Log your workouts, track those numbers. You know, a lot of the other variables are things that we kind of want to hold consistent. Like I would say, you know, our RPE, we want consistently in a very high range, like 8 to 9. We try to keep our rest fairly consistent as well. That's all programmed as part of the split. The overall volume is fairly controlled. The quality of the reps, I want to be fairly controlled. And that's one of the reasons why I want to see a lot of video feedback from my clients so that I can make sure that it's not, we're not letting it slip too much. So, all of those things being things that, you know, could be variable, we want to hold some of them constant. So then we are focusing on things like, you know, weight, and then reps is another one. And then we can focus on programming changes like from one split to the next. Where is something located? Is a muscle group getting pre-exhausted first and all that stuff? Track those numbers and then suddenly everything else will kind of start to fall into place. So when it comes to tracking your workout variables and forcing progression, there's a lot of stuff that goes into it, but I need you to be aware of all of the things that we want to hold constant. So then we can try and do that. And then that reduces the number of variables that we actually have to track to something that's a little bit more manageable, hopefully. So it is absolutely, once again, worth another discussion regarding the scale. And I come back to this and I come back to it frequently. I know I've discussed this a couple of times here before, but I don't expect everybody to go back and listen through all of the archives on this. And even if you do, I think it's good to really wrap your head around why we want to use this, how to use it correctly, and how to interpret the numbers as well. So I'm going to give you a little bit of inside info here. When I look at weigh-in numbers from clients and how I analyze that and the thought process that goes into it, and then also what I end up doing a lot of time with those numbers is, you know, I use them, but then I also end up having to assuage fears like, oh God, it's not moving. What is it doing? It's going up. It's going in the wrong direction. So this is kind of a, you know, I'm going to start out with a little scale 101, and then we might do a little 201 and 301 level course as well. So I'm going to try and condense that and keep it relatively brief and to the point. But, you know, it's a topic that is useful. And like I said, it is worth revisiting as well. One of the things that oftentimes, you know, I'll start working with somebody and it becomes evident, like, I'm looking for some scale weigh-in numbers. And then I get a lot of hesitance, backlash from people like, eh, I really don't want to do that. I don't want to step on the scale. I'm like, well, you're working with a coach and your coach needs data. And if he says he doesn't, then either he's got one hell of an eye, you're taking some ridiculously great high quality progress pics and you're really giving him good feedback on what you are seeing and how you're feeling. And there's a lot of, you know, video exchanging ways as well, so that he can see you in other settings. He can kind of, he or she can kind of see how your physique is shaping up, what it looks like when you're in the gym. But you know, I take all of those data points. I want some numbers as well. And, you know, it is a number. Oftentimes I get asked from somebody who's working towards a show, what's our target weight? And my answer is always, I could care less. I don't give a shit what your weight is when you're on stage. You're going to look the part. But it's not a target. And if somebody says, well, you know, my goal is to weigh 110 pounds. Great. Cut off your left leg and you'll be there right now. That is not, we don't want to set goals based on a weight. Now, if you have been competing for a long time and you've done several shows and you know, well, you know, at the last show, I weighed in at, you know, 196. It is not unreasonable to say, well, I've been working to put on some size. You know, I came in really well conditioned last time. I was really happy with that, but I want some extra size. I would love to come in a couple pounds heavier than 196. that's reasonable. If you're working towards a first show, though, it's really impossible to say, just because we can estimate your body fat, but we're not going to get an accurate reading on that number most likely. So we're going to be guessing a little bit. I can give you a ballpark, like it's probably going to be around here, but you know, ultimately you're going to come in at the weight you come in at. So it is not a means to set a target for most people, for really everybody other than those who have a lot of experience competing or going through these cycles. You know, whether you compete or not, if you're just cutting down to a certain weight or go shape, chasing a certain aesthetic, you want to get, you know, so lean, you want to look the part, great. Take a note of your weight, and then we're going to keep our eye on that when we, you know, try and grow a little bit. And then when we cut back down, we've got a measuring stick that we can use to kind of measure progress for. But as far as chasing a specific number, it's a terrible idea, especially if it's your first time going through a process like this. So I use it as a data collection method along the way, almost exclusively. Like I'm using that to track, you know, rate of progress and that kind of thing. But you also have to read between the lines a little bit, because let's look at what that number really is. It is a reflection, you know, it's in pounds or kilograms. That is either a force, if we're talking pounds, or it's a mass, which if we're in kilograms. So I'm going to spare you the physics lesson here. The difference there is whether or not you throw in the Earth's gravity into the mix or not. That's what a force is. So I think, you know, we think of mass and weight or force, depending on the units that we're talking about, as being interchangeable. And they're not really, but for our purposes, we're going to pretend that they are. So we're talking about weight, how much you weigh, clearly. So when you look at that number on the scale, it is telling you how much you weigh, but it's giving you zero insight as to where that weight is coming from. And that is a big deal. That is a really, really big deal. There are certain things that can be accepted to be constant. Things like, you know, the weight or the total mass of your skin probably isn't going to change through prep. Same thing with your bone density, hopefully. You know, your bones that make up your body should weigh about the same. Your organs should weigh about the same. Your hair, you know, should weigh about the same. Except for me, I probably lose about a pound on haircut day. But a lot of things will and should remain constant. There are other things that are going to fluctuate, and the big three that we are concerned with are body fat tissue, of course, lean muscle tissue, and fluids. Now, we are not looking to lose or gain fluids throughout prep necessarily, with the final few days possibly being an exception there. What we're really looking to track are fat and muscle. The problem is your body fluid mass will fluctuate, and it will fluctuate a lot. And when you see big jumps in the scale, that is what is happening. You're looking at fluid fluctuation. So if you look at, let me pull up somebody's file here. I should have done this a while back. I got to think of who would be a good candidate for this. Of all my clients that send me their stuff on a regular basis, who would be a good one to pull up? I got just the one here. Okay, hold on a second. Bear with me. You know, I am recording a podcast here, so you'd think I could just pause this thing and call it good. But nope, we're going to pull up this tracker right here. So, you know, I have clients who, a lot of my clients, not all, but I've started doing this with clients in the past few months, and I've rolled it out to some older clients as well, started completing a daily tracker. So it's a spreadsheet where they get to track their weight, you know, just their lifting schedule, basically, like, hey, I did legs this day, back this day. So I can look at that and over time say, hey, we haven't had a rest day in a while. What's up with that? They can log their cardio, their macros or dietary deviations, and then if there's any notes like, oh, I slept in 4 hours here, that's why the number's lower, that kind of stuff. So, or I was really short on my water intake, all of those things will have some big impacts on what this scale number means. So I'm looking at this tracker here, and this is somebody who's prepping for a show right now. She's getting ready for a figure show. She's a few weeks out. And so we look back here, and I'm just going to pick some dates from the beginning of February here. And we're at, you know, 137.4. And this is devoid of any kind of crazy dietary trickery, unless specified otherwise. 137.4, the next day it's up 0.9 pounds, 138.3. What's going on there? The macros were spot on, cardio is there, et cetera. We're retaining fluids. Now, think of what's going to make you retain a pound of anything from one day to the next. Have we suddenly gained 0.9 pounds of muscle? Hell no. If that could happen, we would want to figure out that secret and then duplicate that every day. That is not what's happening here. Did we suddenly gain 0.9 pounds of fat? Hell no. We're on a caloric deficit. We're doing cardio. The body overall is cooperating really well. So there's no real possibility of that happening here. These macros are accurate. I know they're getting hit. So what is going on? Well, clearly something's happening, which is making this person retain some extra fluids, or she could have a backed up digestive system, got to take a poop, backed up. That's going to, you know, solid waste that's still in your body and hasn't found its way out yet is going to impact that scale number as well. It's a combination of those last two things. That's all it is. So what do we see the next day? We're at 137.4, 138.3. The next day, 135.9. That's a drop of 2.4 pounds. Did we suddenly lose 2.4 pounds of fat? No. Not at all. If we look back and compare to 3 days prior, so the, going back one day further than when we started here, we started at 136.6, then 137.4, up 8 tenths, 138.3, up 9 tenths, and then 135.9, which now we're down 7 tenths from that first number. That's more realistic. That is probably some good insight. Okay, clearly. So we need to not lose our shit about any one of these numbers and realize that this fluctuation is all normal. And as long as you stick with the plan and don't let that crap get in your head, things are going to continue doing what they're doing. So at 135.9, the next day it's 135.8, down a tenth. This is a low carb day. It's actually a ketosis day. It's a day off. So on that rest day, we're doing a lower carb day, higher fats as well. So the calories aren't totally in the tank. And then the next day we wake up and we're 6 tenths of a pound lower. The next day it's 4 tenths below that. The next day it's 6 tenths below that. And then we go back up a little bit. So we're up 2 tenths, steady, up 4 tenths, up 1.2 pounds following a 500 grams of carb refeed day. And then we're down 6 tenths, down 8 tenths, steady, down 2 tenths, steady, up a little bit, down, 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 down. End of the story here. So now we're at February 28th. We're at 132.8. Starting back at this story, it was February 8th at 136.6. We do the math there, 136.6, 132.8, and you know, that's what, 3.5 pounds in about 2.5 weeks. That's pretty good. So what you need to do is a couple things. First of all, chill out. Don't worry about any one of these numbers or any two of these numbers, but zoom out a little bit and look at trends. Watch the trends develop. Give them a chance to develop. Stick to the routine. Whatever you're doing, stick to it, because oftentimes there is this reflex where if you see a number that's not doing what you think it should be doing, then you're going to freak out and change something. And then you don't really give your body a chance to regulate, balance things out, and then see what's actually going to happen here. Also, keep in mind, this is one variable. So yeah, we want to track this, we want to watch it, but there isn't it's not the only thing that we're doing. So we're also tracking how are we feeling? How are the workouts coming along? Is cardio intensity still up where it needs to be? Do we feel bloated? Do we feel backed up? How is digestion? All of those things play into it as well as far as deciding if we're on the right course of action here. So then the question becomes, well, Darren, if the day-to-day stuff doesn't really matter, then why are we tracking these numbers every day? And I would say, first of all, we don't have to track them every day, but I also always tell people that the more data points we can collect and put on this spreadsheet, the faster I can see trends developing. So let's go back in our hypothetical example here, and let's say February 3rd under this example here. We're at 138.0. That's a Saturday. So now let's fast forward to February 10th, the following Saturday. We're actually up 3 tenths of a pound. And so you might think, what's going on here? That's kind of weird. Well, you know, we had a refeed 2 days prior. That might have something to do with it. There were 400 grams of carbs thrown in on that day. That might have something to do with it. And so you will miss, if you don't see that, you will miss that things are slowly, steadily trending down. And we actually saw a number that was 1.4 pounds lower than that starting figure. So you would miss then, if you only are checking these numbers on Saturday, you'd think like, man, I gained 3 tenths of a pound. Well, actually, I mean, you're holding some fluid and some solid waste probably, but we had seen evidence of close to a pound and a half drop throughout the week. But if you're only weighing yourself on Saturdays, you're going to miss that. So you're going to freak your shit out because it looks like you're gaining weight. And then you're going to look at that number. And if you had previously thought that you were moving in the right direction and you were feeling leaner, you're like, oh, my pants are fitting a little bit different. You know, I think I'm seeing some changes here. And then you see that number that says you're up 3 tenths of a pound. And suddenly that's going to undo and overwrite everything that you thought was going well, and suddenly you're going to think that everything is going in the wrong direction, and you've got to go into panic mode, freak out, and start changing stuff. So there is tremendous value in tracking these numbers and looking at them closely if you know how to interpret what they're telling you. So there are some times where, you know, if we see these numbers trending up a little bit and then that coincides with other things like, man, I'm not feeling really well. I feel super, super bloated and it's not going away. It's not like a 1 or 2 day thing. It's been like 5 days like this. Okay, red alert, there's probably something that we need to address there. So we can use it as a sign that things are going in the right direction or a sign that there may be an issue that we need to address, but it's just a starting point for that discovery process. And then you need to look a little bit deeper. And this is where it's helpful to have a coach, because I can tell you, even looking at my own tracker, when I track my own weight, it's really easy for me to fall into all the same traps that I'm talking about here. So, and you know, that's going to vary from one person to the next. A lot of people can look at this stuff and look at it with a very, you know, very, very much, very objectively, like it's a third party looking down at these numbers. And that's how you need to approach it. You know, lose the emotional attachment to the number. Realize that it doesn't really matter what the number tells you, as long as everything feels good and everything's moving in the right direction, if you're seeing changes, if you're noticing changes. But there are also times where, based on where you are in the cut, you know, if you like towards the end of a cut, towards showtime or your goal date or whatever it is, if you drop a pound, you're going to see that. I mean, you're going to see evidence of that all over the place if you drop a pound. Now, if you are 16, 20, 24 weeks out, not even prepping for a show, but just trying to lose some pounds because you got too many, and you lose a pound, it's going to be really hard to see or feel evidence of that. So you will go through these phases where you could drop, you know, if you've got a significant amount of weight to lose, you could drop 10 pounds and not necessarily feel terribly different. Whereas, you know, you towards the end of a show, like the last 2 weeks or so, you could drop half a pound and start seeing all kinds of changes show up. So expect that there will be peaks and valleys in the correlation between that weight loss and what you see and what you feel. So there will be times where, you know, the scale isn't moving a whole lot really at all, but man, I am seeing some changes. And conversely, there will be times where that number is plummeting, but you're not really seeing anything. And part of that is, we all tend to have these spots on our body where we look to assess change, and sometimes that's not where the change is happening. So keep in mind, like, you know, maybe you're really leaning out in your glutes or your quads, but you're trying to see if there's a new vein coming out in your shoulders or your bicep or something like that. You know, you might not be seeing it there. So anyway, it is really valuable to track this stuff, especially if you're working with a coach, because you want that coach to be armed with as much data as they can possibly have, assuming they know how to interpret it if you don't. So keep all that stuff in mind. And the goal with all of this is to have data at your fingertips so that you can analyze it rationally, make an informed decision, and then take it from there and make adjustments to your plan as would be necessary based on what you see.
Time to wrap it up. Closing thoughts.
So to wrap things up for this week, I just wanted to touch on something that I know I've discussed before. Bodybuilding is one of those ventures where you are really encouraged to be as pigheaded, as stubborn, as selfish, as sacrificing, and as generally just hardcore as possible in order to be successful. This leads to the mentality where if you don't feel like you can do that and bring that every single day, you're a total failure and you should just quit. And I say this just because, in full disclosure, I've definitely been feeling that way myself the last couple weeks. Not like I'm going to quit, but just like, man, I'm having a tough time bringing it. And I think it's just important to recognize that you can't really be a complete and total beast all the time, unless you're just like superhuman. And if you are, you know what? Kudos to you, but you are the exception. And that is why you, if you're listening to this and I'm talking to you, that's why you're going to be successful at this, or why you already are successful at this. For the rest of us, and I'm talking about like 98.5% of us out there, those who, you know, we love this, we do it, we enjoy it. You know, there's some aspects of it that maybe we love a little bit less, but in general, the whole aspect of bodybuilding, everything that's involved in it, we enjoy it. You know, we like lifting, we like, you know, the diet is, you know, take it or leave it, but it's a means to an end. Same thing with the cardio, but the results are there and the process is enjoyable and it's fun. But you know what? All of those things can be true, and you can still have those weeks where you're just kind of like, ugh, fuck it. Really? I gotta do this again? that's okay. You're a human being, and it's okay to be a human being and have a down week every now and then. So this is something that, this is a pep talk that I'm giving myself periodically. And I know I've been doing this long enough. It's going to happen. It's going to linger for, you know, 5 to 10 days, and then we're going to be back. And, you know, my body's getting a nice little recovery right now, so I'm going to be back and better than I was before in no time, maybe by this weekend. Who knows? We'll see. There's nothing that has to necessarily be done to force the issue. What I'm dealing with is not anything medical or anything like that. It's just, it's in my head, you know? My head's tired. My brain's tired. You know, you're allowed to get tired. This is a grind. Everybody says that, and it's time to acknowledge that there's a little bit of a downside to that. You know, with any grind, you're eventually going to fatigue of it, and you're due a little break. Now, I would argue that the duration of that break is potentially a sore spot for some people. Like, there are some people like, yeah, I took a break and I didn't go to the gym for 6 months. Okay, that might have been a little excessive. I don't know that that is really necessary in any circumstances. But, you know, you take a week off from the gym, you take a week break from your diet or whatever, are you going to die? Is it the end of the world? Are you going to immediately get fat? And no, none of that's going to happen. You know, now, if you take a week off from the gym and your diet and you decide during that week that you are going to eat like a jackass and try to put on as much weight as you possibly can, I mean, you will probably find a way to be successful with that. That is not what I mean. But if you take a break where, you know, like, still going to do a little bit of basic meal prep, still have like your staple meals here and there, but just worry about, you know, I'm going to eat a little something extra here and there. I haven't had this in forever. I'm going to try that. And, you know, over the course of a week, you put on a couple pounds. It's not the end of the world. You know what? I mean, one of the great things about being a bodybuilder is you know how to manipulate your body fat. It requires some work and some effort, but you can't just keep your foot on the gas pedal and keep that pedal buried into the floor the whole time. You got to ease up a little bit. You got to stop at a gas station to refuel. You've got to, you know, let your car's engine cool down a little bit. I'm really laying it on with the automotive metaphors here, and I apologize for that. But you get the idea. You get the idea. It's okay to be hardcore, but it's also okay to say, hey, time out. Time out. I'm going to not be hardcore for a week. I'm going to live a little bit more normally, and I'm just going to let my body recover and be a normal human being. So I just wanted to leave you with that little bit of advice. So in the meantime, please, please, I will get down on my knees and beg if I have to. Please don't make me. I want to keep a little bit of my dignity. That would be great. Go to my website and vote in the poll on rest days. How many rest days are you taking? It's 5starphysique.com. Scroll down just below the main header graphic and vote in the poll there. Follow me on Instagram at Darren_Star, on YouTube, Facebook, and Pinterest under 5starphysique. And the website, 5starphysique.com. You can email me directly, Darren@5starfitness.com. So I hope everybody has a fantastic week. I'll catch up with you all here next week.